So, I told you last week that Rav Amital tried to fuse humanism and religion. And I told you that it cut across many, many different areas of his thought and his conversations with us. And last week, we discussed probably the most dramatic issue. What happens when those two systems clash, as they did at the Akedah? The Akedah is a narrative, not just a particular event. It captures events that happen to every man at every time in history. And of course, the simple read of the Akedah is submission. But Chazal demanded to maintain the humanity of the people at Har HaMoriah. They were fathers and children. They were undergoing inner turmoil and struggle, wrestling with the irreconcilability, maybe Chaim closed the door, irreconcilability of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's imperceptible command and the presuming immorality of it. And most importantly, Avram was davening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to rescind the Gzera. And finally, he's crying even though he's happy. Rav Amital also spoke about it in more general terms. And in some ways, today's shiur should have been sequenced before last week's shiur. I just wanted to juxtapose last week's shiur to Parshas Vayera as close as possible. Because that issue, the dramatic clash at Har Moriah, is just one very, very minor part. It's very dramatic, it's very exciting, but very few of us live in Har Moriah or live in Har Moriah-like settings most of our lives. Most of our lives, we're not facing that irreconcilable clash. Most of our lives, we're facing the following question. What value is there to any impulse, thought, morality, or code if it isn't incorporated in the Torah? Is the Torah the be-all and end-all, and Hashem's divine command is the source of morality, ethics, human behavior, welfare? And in many ways it is. It introduces a range of laws and rules, theft, murder, adultery, lying, honesty. You can sense a moral code being delivered. So should we see the Torah as the creative source of all of our morality and ethics? Or can there be an ethic independent? So Rav Amital proved that there was, based on two fascinating inferences. Number one, source number one, the Gemara in Erevin says, had the Torah, and this is widely quoted, if you're looking for one source that captures the theme of tonight's shiur, it's this source. By the way, I'm just reviewing the article entitled Natural Morality in Ha'aretz HaTal of Ne'adam. So I strongly encourage you to go back after today's shiur and read it, but I'm reorganizing it because Rav Amital, unlike Rav Lichtenstein, didn't give these highly organized lectures, and his starting point sometimes is very, I won't say random, but he started with whatever parsha he was discussing, and then he started to develop ideas seemingly very, very serendipitously. It was hard to follow the flow and why A led to B, led to C. So I'm not necessarily starting with the beginning of the section, but I'm trying to organize it in a slightly different fashion for you. Okay. Rabbi Yochanan said, had HaKadosh Baruch Hu not commanded morality in the Torah, we could have learned industry and work ethic from the ant. We could have studied and discerned loyalty in the dove. We could have recognized the dangers of theft from the ant. We could have learned sneers from the chicken. We could have learned from the cat. We could have learned sexual mores from the chicken. Without getting into detail, you obviously realize that by viewing an ant colony, you can recognize and appreciate work, industry, collaborative work, honesty, selflessness. It takes many, many different noble traits to form an ant colony. There's a notion that even without the Torah, even if HaKadosh Baruch Hu hadn't delivered the Torah, we could have achieved a moral code and a moral baseline by studying the world of nature, by carefully inspecting the various elements of the animal kingdom. Of course, these are just four examples. In theory, we study any part of nature. And nature is not just a scientific template or a scientific gloss, but you can sense moral values on display by viewing the animal kingdom. Number one, so evidently even animals that don't operate under the rubric of Hashem's revealed word of Torah still possess traits that can lessen or educate humans towards greater moral behavior. Number two, the accountability of Gentiles throughout the Torah for immoral behavior. The fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu bans Ammonim and Moavim from entering the Jewish race. Why? Al-Davar, source number two, Hashem lo kidmu eschem balechem uvamayim. They didn't greet you. They weren't hospitable. They didn't ease your traveling stress. They had no commandments. These are Ammon and Moav. They're not part of the Zayin Mitzvahs B'nei Noach, Achnasas Orchim. They didn't kill anyone. They didn't murder anyone. But yet, it's expected. Basic common decency. And a betrayal of those basic common expectations constitutes a moral flaw that renders them unsuited, unfit, to be part of Am Yisrael. They're banished or they're banned. Or, as the Chizkuni says in Parshas Vayera, why were Anshei Sdom punished? Doesn't seem as if they violated the mitzvahs, the few mitzvahs that humanity had been entrusted with. They didn't murder anyone. They were moral. They were cruel. They were merciless. Okay, so. They necessarily have to receive Shishi on Yom Kippur. But why devastation? Why upheaval? Again, the basic moral expectations were violated, and therefore they have to be eliminated, and history has to be, humanity has to be rebooted. So by studying respectively the animal kingdom and witnessing repercussions for Gentile cultures that veer wildly from basic norms and moral expectations, you get a sense that there is a code out there. And that code pre-exists Har Sinai. And that code is delivered or embedded and programmed within animals. And that code applies even to those who don't partake of Har Sinai. So there is a code. But that's only step one. There could be a code. But that code is only useful and only meaningful for 2,448 years until Har Sinai comes. Now that Hashem reveals himself at Har Sinai, mass revelation, Nase v'nishma, lo tirtzach, it renders irrelevant any prior code. Indeed, HaKadosh Baruch Hu enabled humans to find him through this great moral code, and great people such as our Avos did discover him without the benefit of mass revelation through moral energy and moral behavior, and they studied the animal kingdom, and Avram studied science and sensed the inner moral impulse, and nations that didn't adhere to basic moral expectations were severely dealt with. But out with the old and with the new. Now HaKadosh Baruch Hu issues commandments, this major event at Har Sinai, and everything before Har Sinai is rendered meaningless. So Rav Amital disproved that notion through two vehicles. Number one, there's a machlokas in the Gemara in Sanhedrin. If a Jew kills a Gentile or a quasi-Jew or Ger Toshav, does he receive Mises based? Machlokas Tanayim. The Rambam paskins that he doesn't. Very, very stark position. If a Jew were to murder a Ger Toshav, someone who denounces paganism and lives under Jewish sovereignty, not a full Ger, not a full Jew, he wouldn't be administered the death penalty. Okay. Now let's see how the Kesef Mishnah struggles with the Rambam. Kesef Mishnah was written by the Beis Yosef. First of all, he demands, this is source number four, he demands that even though, I didn't quote it, but it's in the continuation, even though you won't be administered Misa Bidei Adam, you're still culpable in Shemayim. You still receive Misa. You're not scot-free. You can't escape this act of murder just because Misa Bidei Shemayim, Misa Bidei Adam isn't applicable. But more importantly, he quotes a Mechilta that disagrees. But look beyond the particular Machlokas. We're not interested right now whether the Jew does or doesn't receive Misa. What we're interested in is the connotations. Listen to the connotations. Listen to the Mechilta quoting Isi Ben Akiva. It's not clear whether this was Isi ben Akiva, Rabbi Akiva, or someone else, but Isi is a nickname for Yisrael, like Izzy. Isi ben Akiva, shocked at the notion. Listen to his words. Isi ben Akiva, Source 4, quoted by the Kesef Mishnah, it's in the Mechilta, Kode matantara hayinu mazarim al shvichas damim. If you lived in the year 2447, or you murdered a Ger Toshav on Dalet Sivan, 2448, 2 days before Har Sinai, Beis Din, if it existed, could administer a death penalty because you weren't allowed to murder any human being. Now, after Matan Torah, post Matan Torah, now you're scot-free. Now you're escape penalty. Listen to the language. Very important. Look inside. Last line, source 4. Li'achar Matan Torah shehuchmeru huklu? It is inconceivable that Matan Torah releases your responsibilities. Matan Torah augments your responsibilities. I was talking to some German visitors today. I was trying to tell them about the universalism of Judaism. I said, I care about you because my Jewish messianic endgame does not entail your conversion to Judaism. In fact, it's the only religion that doesn't try to convert anyone else. For you, when Messiah comes, I become Christian. For me, when Mashiach comes, I just live a more regulated lifestyle that I've lived for thousands of years, even without redemption, more mitzvahs, kingdom of priests, you can appreciate the value and the nobility of a life of monotheism, morality, and commandments. So that you're able to then translate that lifestyle into your own terms, your seven mitzvahs. I have no interest in imposing 613 on you. Given that notion, that trajectory, it's inconceivable that Har Sinai would release responsibility. It augments it, intensifies it. After Har Sinai, I have more mitzvahs. But the mitzvahs that were imposed on humanity before Har Sinai remain intact. And the notion that on Dalet Sivan, I could be chayav for murdering a Kiryat Toshav, and on Vav Sivan, I should be pater, is completely, completely a betrayal of what Har Sinai means. Now, if Har Sinai essentially is a replacement rather than an enhancement, then in theory, it totally wipes out the entire original system and can replace it with a new system. It's a reboot. This Mechilta suggests it isn't a reboot. It's an augmentation. It's an intensification. And whatever you had beforehand still remains intact. And now Har Sinai uploads additional mitzvahs. This is an amazing statement of Ravamita. That's not what the Mechilta is talking about. The Mechilta is talking about a very narrow issue. Should you be chayav for killing Kiryat Toshav? But the language of the Mechilta in response to the Rambam Shita that says, your pater says, it's impossible to imagine Har Sinai releasing responsibility. Why not? If it's a supplanting. It's not a supplanting. It's a broadening. It's an enhancement. Whereas the Gemara in Sanhedrin says, a very similar conversation in Gemara in Sanhedrin, source number 5, Leka Midam. It's inconceivable to think of a notion of an item to the Yisrael Shari Vilanachri Aser. There's nothing that's Aser for a guy that's Mutter for a Jew. That's structurally flawed. There are more items Aser for us than for Gentiles. But it's impossible to, the Gemara has a very specific conversation there. But that's a structural flaw. It's a structural malfunction. We live with greater mitzvos. We live with greater commandment. Again, this is not our topic tonight. But the notion that Har Sinai completely vaporized, completely disqualified the past system that was intact, was inconceivable to Rav Amital. And, in a very, very powerful statement about the nature of Har Sinai, Rav Amital quoted the Meshech Chachma. Just to remind you, the Meshech Chachma, Ben Amir Simcha Cohen, wrote the Meshech Chachma, Rav of Dvinsk, late 19th century, Or Sameach on the Rambam, one of the great, I won't say the generation prior to the Holocaust, the generation before the generation of the Holocaust. One of the great, great Lithuanian rabbis, Ben Amir Simcha Cohen. He comments on the following pasuk, source number 6. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe. Hashem invites Moshe for Har Sinai. This is Parshas Ki Tisa. Ascend the mountain, and you'll come down with the following 4 items. Et Nalacha, I apologize for the spots. Et Nalacha, Luchos Evan, tablets with commandments. Okay, 10 commandments. HaTorah, we know what that is. HaMitzvah, the mitzvahs, beyond the 10 commandments. So we've got the 3. Asher Kosafti Laharosam. What's that 4th element? And many Mefarshim say it's not qualifying the first 3. Because the first 3 don't need a qualifier. Of course Hashem wrote them. So what's this 4th element that Hashem delivers to Moshe upon his descent from Har Sinai? Are you ready for an amazing Meshech Chachma? I recommend, if you haven't been exposed to the Meshech Chachma, try it. It's incredible sefer. Incredible. Take a look at source 7. Venira, he quotes the Gemara in Erevin. That talks about morality being latent in the natural world. The ants, the doves, the chickens, the cats. Just a quote. Then he says, L'chein amar asher kasavti, b'sefer hateva asher yatzarti. To be fully religious, I'm giving you 4 sources of instruction. Luchos, Torah, mitzvos, and the book of nature. Study all 4 of them. And if you study all 4, you'll have the complete package. Luchos Aven, Hatara, Vamitzvah, Asher Kosafti, Sefer HaTeva, Jesus Sefer Shel Hashem Yisbarach HaYotza. The world around us is Hashem's book. Now, of course, we all understand you can get more and a clearer vision of Hashem by studying His revealed will than by trying to decode His book of nature. So, on any day, you can get more by studying a page in Bava Kamma if you study it well, which is Hashem's directly revealed word, than trying to go on a nature hunt or watching an ocean video. But they're both meaningful. And for our purposes, because that's not our conversation tonight, which is more direct, for our purposes, there is a system independent of Torah, book of nature, inner nobility, inner impulses that Hashem embedded in your heart. So that it exists is one statement. That it survives Har Sinai is another statement. You would have thought it was necessary for 2,400 years, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu essentially rebooted history and delivered his revealed word. And that's the only source, the only depot, the only reservoir for moral instruction. The answer is no. It's a hybrid. It's a fusion. And it exists after Har Sinai. So now the question is, what are the applications of this concept? And here's where Rav Amital was a lot more, I would say, grounded than Rav Lichtenstein. Saying, if you're interested, Rav Lichtenstein wrote about a lot of these sources and about the same issue in Bais Light, a speech that I think I heard him give in one of the conferences of the 80s. Get ready. I mean, you're off into a very, very abstract place about the meaning of good and the meaning of God and what commandments do and don't represent. And Rav Amital was more applications. He didn't say, here's how you apply it, but he just was talking to us and giving us methodologies for meeting this concept in our day-to-day. How does this affect our Avodas Hashem? So first of all, what's the structure? How do these two cross-pollinate? Like, what role does inner human morality, human impulse, natural religion, as we'd call it, what role does it play? See, quoted Rav Kook, and again, this is something we're very exposed to the influence of Rav Kook and Rav Amital. I feel that it was less in his later years, but certainly in the early 80s, mid-80s, he had a lot of Rav Kook. Rav Amital was part of that world. It was a Talmid in America, Rav Kook, that came to him and asked him to form this yeshiva. So take a look at source 8. It's source 8. I hope this is the right one. Yeah, source 8 is from Rav Kook's Arot HaTorah, back of the first page. HaMusar B'Tivi Yuso. This is actually the title of Rav Amital's article in Arot HaTorah of Ne'adam, or HaMusar TV. HaMusar B'Tivi Yuso, natural morality. B'chol Omek Hodo V'Kocho Ha'itan. He's very poetic in its full glory and full strength. M'chrach Li'Kava B'Nefesh. It should be embedded in your neshama. V'yiyah Matzah. Anyone know what a matzah is? Mem Sadi Ayin? Platform. It should serve as a platform for religious identity. So imagine a structure that you build. You build a platform. Iron, steel, cement, concrete, foundations. And once the platform is solid, then you start building higher stories, more rooms. The platform has to be, as we would call, menschlichkeit, being a good person, being a kind person. Not because the Torah says so, but because your inner heart demands it, because you're brought up to be considerate, whatever values we'd enumerate without going into detail. So there's a bit of almost an architectural metaphor, how you train people. If the foundation is rotten, then the structure will be very, very flimsy, and the structure will, of course, fall. What other aspects did Rav Amital talk about? He talked about the fact that Rishonim, in particular the Rambam, were so adamant about Tam HaMitzvos. The Rambam, by writing a Sefer HaMitzvos and trying to trace the reason for the reason for this mitzvah. That is a diluting statement. The reason you perform Hashem's Torah? Because He commanded it. And any attempt to discover reason is just going to diminish the force and the potency of the mitzvah, because it's humanizing the mitzvah. Commandments are submission to a divine, unknowable, illogical decree. Not according to the Rambam. If there's a reason for a mitzvah, and that reason, in many cases, can be explained in human terms, and it suggests that the mitzvah accords with another system. Hashem, famous question, is an action moral because Hashem commanded it, or Hashem commanded it because it's moral? Very famous question in philosophy. Both Rav Lichtenstein and Rav Amital felt very strongly, almost as if Hashem doesn't have free choice. Hashem had to prohibit murder, because murder is inherently immoral. It's not as if HaKadosh Baruch Hu had commanded us to murder, then that would be the moral activity, as a general scale, not just the Akedah or Malach, but in general. No, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is beholden, so to speak. Of course, He created that independent morality. But Hashem, when He decided Har Sinai to issue commandments, it was because there was an internal extrinsic morality that Hashem created, independent of the Torah, and the Torah had to conform to that morality. And now Rishonim are trying to go about discovering what's the reason for this mitzvah, what's the reason for that mitzvah, because there's a system that halacha should conform to. And the Rambam is very, very adamant, as he sometimes gets when he feels that there are very, very central, cardinal issues being debated that he felt shouldn't be debated. Let's just read the Rambam in Morei Nevuchim, source 9. Rav Amital also quoted a lot of Morei Nevuchim. Never heard Morei Nevuchim quoted as often as from Rosh Yeshiva, from Rabbanim. I've heard in philosophy classes. Rav Amital taught us to read certain sections of Morei Nevuchim and draw meaning from it. It's very confusing, very abstract. Source number 9. b'bnei adam anashim sheyichbad aleihem nesin asiba lemitzvot. People feel it's very heavy. They're uncomfortable with providing reasons for mitzvahs. V'atov etzlam, what is their ideal? Shelo yuskal lemitzvah. There should be no logic to a mitzvah. Line 2, source 9. V'ashay v'yem alzeh, you know what causes this attitude? Hucholi, it's a sickness, it's an illness. Shinzir b'nafsham, it's an unbearable illness. Line 3, they believe, if we find a reason for a mitzvah, and that's why Hashem commanded, end of line 4, these are logical mitzvahs, and they're less divine, they're less transcendent, because they're logical. Of course, for the Rambam, a great logical or rationalist, logic and divinity aren't in any way antithetical. So, for the Rambam, this is a central core of his message, that attributing logic and finding logic is not in any way lessen the divinity or the luster of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's command. So the fact that when you read Rishonim and you find a reason for a mitzvah, you're trying to reconcile HaKadosh Baruch Hu's commands and his system with a predetermined system. Yeah, that can be very, very dangerous. It's a very dangerous statement, predetermined system. Where does that come from? Does it come from an inner purity? Does it come from a corrupted society? Right? We feel there are certain predetermined views of morality that our society has endowed us with that contradict the Torah, and we go, wait a second, we don't want to submit the Torah to that logic. We feel that, I mean, things are obvious to all of you. But so it could be a very, very dangerous statement. What's your baseline? What's your baseline of morality? And is the world you grew up in corrupted in certain areas? But as a concept, it's a very powerful concept. Number two, when you perform mitzvahs of chesed, why should you perform mitzvahs of chesed? The very famous Sridi Eish. Anyone know who the Sridi Eish was? Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg. He was the last rector of a very interesting institution in Germany. It's called the Hildesheimer Institute. It was an attempt to create a fusion between classic Talmud Torah and more of the modern methods of Haskalah that so many people saw as perilous and hazardous. Anyone know who the four, they were called the rectors of the Hildesheimer Institute. Well, the first one was Rabbi Israel Hildesheimer, a great, great German rabbi. The next one, have you ever heard of Rabbi David Zvi Hoffman, a great biblical scholar? He was the rector. The third was, in my opinion, one of the greatest members of his generation, but he died very young, so it's very hard for people to appreciate him, Rav Avram Ilya Kaplan. Fascinating, fascinating. He wrote a Hesped to Herzl, wrote musical poetry, and was the head of the Aguda. Go figure. People who just shatter stereotypes and live beyond labels. And I put out a Hesped for him a couple of years ago on YHWH. Someone read it this week, listens, and it's just Facebook me to thank me. I never appreciated this person. And the final rector was Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg. Very, very interesting. He was involved in the Nazis tried to ban Shechita. And they said you have to stun the animal before Shechita, which, according to the overwhelming positions, would suggest the animal's trade from the Shechita's puzzle. There were Jews in Germany who didn't eat meat for years on end, because you couldn't get classically shechted meat. He performed a lot of scientific research to try to prove that stunning an animal would not render it a trefa. And supposedly he was about to come out and announce this, and he went to the reigning gadol. The reigning gadol of that generation was a rabbi named Reb Chaim Moser Grzinski. So he went to Reb Chaim Moser, and evidently the story goes Reb Chaim Moser is willing to sign off, and then in the end, for whatever reason, no one knows. You know, he decided against the last minute. Very, very raging controversy of the 30s in Germany and Western Europe. He escaped the Holocaust and went to Montreux in Switzerland. He had a small yeshiva there. A lot of his writings have been fascinating, fascinating. He was a real academic and a real big Talmud Chacham. So he writes in the Sridi Eish, when you perform chesed, why don't you recite a bracha? He talks about Mishloach Manos, but you can say the same about chesed, kibbut avayim staka, whatever. Kibbut, biker cholim. Listen to what he says. Fascinating. If you recite a bracha sher tzivano, and you'd imply you're only performing the chesed because Hashem commanded you, you're devaluing the chesed. By attaching a commandment to something which should be obvious, you're devaluing it. That's a powerful notion. Think about that for a moment. So therefore, we avoid reciting a bracha because the phrase asher kiddushano b'mitzvosa v'tzivano, which for us is so sacred, Hashem, I'm submitting to your commandment, this would be a corrupter or an adulterator of something that should be purer than command. Now imagine that notion. I was in a community over Shabbos. I was telling the boys in my shir, I was in Ramat Beit Shemesh over Shabbos, and it gave me a chance to be exposed to a more Haredi formula and reminded me of some of the things that I'm envious of that we're unable to generate in our community, sadly. And I thought a lot over Shabbos. And there was a moment when I was like a little bit uncomfortable. I was in the bathroom. I wasn't uncomfortable. I was in the bathroom. And there was a sign to discourage people from throwing paper towels and wipes and other larger items into the toilet because it could clog up the toilet. And so I've been in a lot of bathrooms that have those signs. Please don't, it'll clog up. The sign was, it's usher to throw tampons and wipes and paper towels into the toilet because it could clog the toilet and cause thousands of shekel of damage and it would be gzela. And I said, what does it mean when the only language you speak in is the language of halachic yisra mutter? And to try to get people not to throw tampons or paper towels in the toilet, you have to employ the word usher, which we use about chazir or tray for basa b'chalav or whatever. And for better or for worse, I'm not commenting, but there's some real, to me, it should supersede something being usher. You just don't do it because of good conscience and because you want to be a good guest and because you don't want to cause a person inconvenience. And we're losing some of that because we're just becoming so halachically rigid and everything is articulated. So this is Sridei Eish. You don't recite a bracha for chesed. You don't recite a bracha. Chazal weren't misagin a bracha. Because the phrase, it's a startling concept. The phrase, asher kiddush ha'chesed, we're diluted. That's very powerful. So we make sure we're not running out of time. We have 7 more minutes. Lifnei Mishura Sadin. Rav Aaron spoke about this extensively. Do you always mark your behavior based on what you're chayev? A little bit what I said a moment ago. Or you're willing to go lifnei Mishura Sadin. Which pasuk, who knows, which pasuk in the Torah obligates you in the realm of Ben Adam L'Chavero, not just to stick to your obligations, but to be generous and forthcoming. V'asisa ha'yashar v'hatov. Which the Ramban interprets in Pashas V'schanim as a mitzvah. The 613th mitzvah, so to speak, is to go beyond the 613 mitzvahs. And not just to ask yourself, well, he owes me, he doesn't owe me. I mean, I'm a landlord. I mean, I'm a landlord, a big landlord of a high rise. I have a tenant and in the basement in my house, and there are always issues that come up, financial issues you should pay. I always feel like, to the best of my ability, I'd rather be on the losing end financially and be on the winning end morally. Even if I wanted to argue, well, it was your fault, and it was this. I'd always rather be in that space as best I can. I can't always, but it should be obvious. You don't just ask yourself, what am I obligated to? You should ask yourself, what ought I to do? What's the right thing to do? Not what my responsibility, chiyuvim are. What's the cousin of that pasuk in the world of Min Adam Lamakom? Not so relevant for the Niger, but also that demands that even in the world of Adam Lamakom, you don't just adhere to the letter of the law, you try to capture the spirit of the law. Spend your whole day involved in hedonism and gluttony and sexual licentiousness, but it's all mutter, the food is kosher. There's a lot of that in our world today. A lot of people who are laser focused on the letter of the law, and you question, where's the spirit? And there's also people who are very, very attuned to the spirit, which is easy because the letter is of heavy burden. You got to have both. You got to be halachically loyal and be able to carry the weight of halachic demands, but also know that it's not about checking the boxes whether the food is kosher. And for a lot of guys in college, it comes to that. You have to ask yourself, this is not a place that a Ben Torah should be. You can't get all these questions, and it hurts me so deeply about paying for the football game ahead of time on Shabbos. So I'll answer the questions to them because they're asking for my halachic input, but my heart is torn. How could you be in that location and ask me the question about the halachic viability? It's just so obvious that this is a non-starter. You don't find yourself in this location. It's not a place that's healthy for your neshama. It's not a place you want. I can't stress enough this question for those of you that will spend the next couple of years in non-Jewish frameworks. There has to be a willingness to say, this is not right. This doesn't sit right with me. And not because of the food, not because of the chilul Shabbos, not because of anything that's taking place. It's simply not the place that I have to be surrounded in or surrounded by. So it's Lefem Mishur HaSadin. Again, there's no mitzvah in the Torah. Again, there's an irony that there's a pasuk in the Torah to tell you to go beyond the Torah. So it's written in the Torah, but it's a shout out in the Torah to a system that's not regulated or institutionalized within halacha. It's the Torah reminding you of that pre-Har Sinai system before it becomes regulated. And then in an amazing Rav Kook, very abstract, but also developmentally very important. Let's turn to, I want to find it for you, make sure we read it together. I think it's the back of the last page. Take a look at this Rav Kook. It's not just about a particular moment in your avodas Hashem, lifnei mishuras hadin, or tama mitzvos. Listen carefully. This is so important, guys. Probably one of the most important parts of tonight's little share. When you grow religiously, do you also feel like you're growing as a person and improving as a person? If the religious growth shrinks or diminishes who you are as a person, then it's unhealthy, says Rav Kook. Just let that settle in for a moment. Now again, human growth is engaged necessarily by the barometers of society. Well, I'm learning the base matters. I'm not playing on five sports teams. I'm not growing as a human being. You're growing the world of ideas. You're growing. But if you feel like you're shriveling as a person, rather than expanding as a person, advancing as a person, let's read Rav Kook, that back page. Simon liyira shamayim tahora. Such a powerful statement. Kisha musar hativi, when your natural morality, instincts, hanatua b'teva yashar, which is not just your instincts, your base instincts, but your moral, noble, pure instincts, holech v'ola alpia, is advancing and augmenting because of religion. This is much more abstract, but much more existential. Do you feel you're a better person 3 months into yeshiva? You're a kinder person. Not just that you do more mitzvahs and get up for minyan. Are you sweeter? Are you kinder? Are you more noble? Are you less sarcastic? Not this isser or that isser. Don't give me a mekayimness. Don't give me a musr. Just look at yourself. Hold the mirror up to yourself. Are you just a better person? In titzuyar. But he says, if it turns out, I reverse the order. The second piece comes before the first, but I put it positive and negative. In titzuyar. Yerushamayim. If you find someone as Yerushamayim, without Yerushamayim, that person would have been a better person. Hachaim yoter notim lif'ol tov, you would have been a better person. Olotzi lapol dver mo'ilim, the prat rukla, you would have been better for humanity without Yerushamayim. Ve'al pi hashpata, now that you're more from, so to speak, mismayit koch ha'po'alahu, you're less of a person. Yerushamayim kasos hi yiras psula. Wow. It's an amazing concept. You can gauge your Hashamayim. It's not just that natural morality is a platform to then build higher stories. Okay, because the higher stories aren't really pollinated by the lower stories. They're just supported. But here, as I'm building the higher stories, I have to check the fitness of the lower story. If that lower story is starting to, in some way, sour or become decayed because of the higher stories are a puzzle. You have to be a better person. I spoke with some of you about this. To carry yourself with dignity. Be better. I told the guys in my share, I can't stress this enough. The visiting season has begun. It should be obvious to every single one of you. When someone comes in the base matters, you stop what you're doing and go say hello. Just like basic hospitality. Why wouldn't you? You see someone in the base matters, hello, my name is, welcome, you need a bathroom, you need a drink. People come into the base matters, they run, if he has to sit, or do you need a place to sit? Just, okay, it's a chnasas orchim. You go to the mitzvah, I don't need a chnasas orchim. It's a natural thing to do. If a guy came, I'd do the same thing. It's not a mitzvah. See a good person, not a good person. See a stranger. They don't know where they are. They're trying to make their way through. There's nothing better than to go into a room and someone comes and say, hey, how are you? Smile or introduce yourself. It's a lesson for life. It's a skill for life. So number one, just to track this year before we have to stop. Number one, that it exists. Nature and goyim have a system that they're accountable for. They exhibit, reflect. Number two, our Sinai isn't a replacement strategy, but an augmentation. Meshech Chachma, four things. Luchos, Mitzvos, Torah, and the book of nature. Not just natural kingdom, nature, human nature, nature of our world, science, math. In theory, if you knew math well enough, you can draw the same world. It's all integrated. And then, where does it express itself? Tama Mitzvos, Ben Adam L'Chavero, you don't make a bracha, lift the Mishura Sadin, growth as a person. And then, of course, Rav Avital spoke about the stira I spoke about last week, which I elaborated on last week at Har HaMoriah, and even though you submit to Hashem, you still maintain your humanity, your father, your son, you worry about your mother, you daven to Hashem to rescind the gzera, you have this inner turmoil in which you're struggling with the validity or the acceptability of this divine command. And here's the punchline. Sometimes, again, it's a crazy case, you'll never be there in Mitzvah Hashem, but just to, sometimes you can allow natural moral impulses to affect the halachic decision. When can you, when can't you? Okay, so it's very clear, and I said this last week, you can never say, that halacha seems off to me for my moral code, therefore I won't keep it. you're out. You're out. That's not orthodoxy. Never, ever, ever. That's your okay at the moment. You try your hardest and it doesn't make sense, you do it. But Rav Amital asked the following question. What happens if you, did I share this with you, you're stranded on a desert island? And you have a choice. You could either eat pig meat or non-shechted animal meat, or you can consume the flesh of a crash victim. You could be a cannibal. What's the premise of this question? From a pure halachic standpoint, cannibalism isn't usher in the Torah. There's no pasuk in the Torah that says don't be a cannibal. Obviously, it doesn't have to. So if I'm calculating from a purely halachic calculus, I should eat human flesh because it's less usher than pig meat or trefa or nevela. It's also meat derabanan, maybe sinister. It's not a lav in the Torah. Rav Amital said you should eat pig meat. It's more usher? Yeah. Because here you have to violate an isser anyway. You already compromised halachically. You already have to violate an isser for pikuach nefesh. Now I'm going to over-tally halacha based on my moral impulse. I have to choose which isser to execute because Hashem wants me to execute an isser for pikuach nefesh. So do I look at it from a pure, cold halacha calculus and eat the human flesh? Or do I allow my moral sensitivity to say, in this case, we're for pikuach nefesh, I have to violate an isser, I'll choose this one, even though it's more usser than the less usser one. And he found the safer then. Ramital was a bucky in shuvahs. He knew tens of thousands of shuvahs. He found the great-grandson of the Chassam Sofer that had that in shuvah. So the fascinating postscript to the story is, having heard him say this, we ran to Rav Aaron. We said, Rebbe, what would you eat? He was there. And Rav Aaron said, if we push it, he would eat the human flesh. And it's very reflective of the different approaches. And it's also a wonderful moment in Grish history, like one of the legendary moments where we were taught, you can disagree. My consensus of opinion. They loved each other to death. They revered each other. What was it? It wasn't like, and then a fistfight broke out. And then two different parties developed in yeshiva. The Rav Aaron cannibal party and the Rav Amital pig fest. Nothing happened. It was very, 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 very like humdrum. Okay. And that was the more important message, that you can respect people whose opinion you disagree, along with the opinion they're halachically solid. So again, you're not going to be on an island eating people's flesh. But how do you process it through in some way? It's not just this other system that can enrich, it somehow can influence the system and determine your halachic behavior. Okay? So next week we'll have part 3 of the series, and we'll talk about how you behave when you fail as a human being. What does it mean to live life as a human being trying to be religious with all the inborn failures, inevitable failures that invites and demands? Okay? Take a breather, a minute or two, and then you know we'll start. I'll probably start right now.